Okay, here we go. It is great to have you with us on the Bi-Coastal Baseball Podcast on the Grid Network. I'm Mike Guido. To my, I guess, again, I always struggle with this. I guess from the viewing perspective, to my right is Alfred Parser Jr. Ignore the Dalton Brown that is below his picture. It is set up in the graphic this way, and we don't have a way to edit it. So that is, in fact, Alfred Parser Jr. Again, I am Mike Guido. It is great to have you with us. We have plenty of stuff to cover today on this beautiful Monday. It's actually not very beautiful. It's about, you know, whatever. It's mid-40s and cloudy and rainy and, you know, shitty for, you know, most of the day today. But plenty of stuff to go over today. My New York Yankees sweeping the Houston Astros. We'll touch on that a little bit later in the show today. We'll obviously discuss what the Mets went through over this past weekend. Alfred shaking his head already. I can see the disappointment already in his face. Alfred, formerly the host of the Metropolitan Report. So there's really not much of a bigger Met fan in the building than him. We'll touch on this too. We'll touch on the Rhys Hoskins slide, because I think you and I will probably have a differing opinion on that particular play. We'll touch on Yoshinobu Yamamoto. His second start was much, much better than what his first start was in South Korea. We'll touch on that. Plus, the cool part about these shows in season now is that we're actually going to be able to give live updates live on the air of games that are currently happening, games that have already happened. So this is going to be interesting. So, Alfred, it's great to have you here, man. I mean, you know, Dalton's out for the day. I think he might have gotten hung up this weekend. I think his bachelor party was this weekend, so I think he might still be. No, his flight got in a little bit late. But Alfred, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Always glad to talk some baseball.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's start today with this. So the New York Yankees were they went into Houston and, might I say, smacked the Houston Astros today, I guess this weekend. No, they didn't smack the Houston Astros, but it was very, very, I would say, pleasing to me to see the Astros go down in such embarrassing fashion to the Yankees, giving up three in the first three games, giving up three late game leads to the Yankees. And here's the things that I noticed, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Because I think the easy takeaways would be that adding Juan Soto to the lineup definitely makes it better. It does. Nobody's denying that. But here are some of the things that I saw, right? The approach is different, right? Right now they're leading Major League Baseball in pitches seen per at bat, right? Like they're swinging and missing less. They're putting the ball in play more. The power wasn't even necessarily there in the series, right? You had a homer from Stanton. Oswaldo Cabrera had two. Volpe had one. Juan Soto kind of snuck one out into the Crawford boxes. But this is not the big banging Yankees that we've seen in years past. The approach just seemed a little bit different. So, Alfred, what was your impression from that series this weekend? And let's phrase it this way. Are you more impressed with the Yankees, or are you more disappointed in the Houston Astros?
I think I'm more impressed with the Yankees, especially the way that game one went. Nestor Cortez did not pitch a good game. I know all the Yankee fans are praising Juan Soto right now because that throw practically saved that game.
Sure did.
But no, I'm not more disappointed in the Astros. The Astros, of course, were the favorite in all those games. You know, Gerrit Cole is out right now, and he's not going to be around for a while. So you would think the pitching rotation would suffer, but surprisingly, they pulled it out. And, you know, the Houston Astros that we've come to know over, you know, the last couple of years, they're like the cream of the crop in the American League, for lack of a better term. So for the Yankees to play a four-game series and take all four games from them, especially the Yankees being a team where pitching is a main concern. Nobody's concerned about the Yankee offense. It's the Yankee pitching. That's always been the Achilles heel, dating back to even the dynasty from 96 to 2001.
Yeah.
In that reign of terror that you guys had. So
right.
I was very surprised that they were able to sweep, not only just sweep them, but take that series as well. I would have predicted a split, if anything, but I guess it's a revenge for 2017.
Yeah, this dates back now. This is seven straight. If you date back to last year, this is seven straight wins for the Yankees against Houston. I don't know. I don't remember if that stat was just in Houston or if that just dates back to just wins total against the Astros. But listen, the Astros have been a thorn in the Yankees' side for years now, right? And pretty much a thorn in everybody's side, right? There's a reason why the Astros have been to seven straight ALCSs. It's because they're just so, they've done such a great job of building their teams. Like, I'll even pull up their lineup from, or their roster. Like, if you just see this, like, most of these guys, Alfred, are homegrown guys, right? Like, Altuve is homegrown. Yordan Alvarez is their guy. Bregman's their guy. Kyle Tucker is their guy. Like, all but really one in this lineup, the one being Jose Abreu, that entire lineup is made up of their homegrown talent. Now, and even in this rotation, right, everybody's homegrown except for Verlander. Like, they've just done such an incredible job of developing talent with that roster. It really is incredible, and it shows you how this can not only be, you know, how it's not only how it's been dominant for them recently, but how it can be sustainable going into the future.
Well, and like you said, a lot of those guys are homegrown, and not just homegrown, but a lot of them have been heroes. Altuve, very important to that franchise since he got there. Alvarez has been a home run smasher. Even Jeremy Peña, World Series hero, when nobody expected it.
Yeah.
So I it's too early to get to worry about, oh, is Houston not going to make the postseason?
Right.
They're going to be just fine. I just think that the Yankees just came out the gates hot. But like you said, the Yankees approach different. Through four games, they've seen more pitches than anybody else. Very, very, very surprising given that lineup and the firepower it has. But
yeah. Yeah. And this lineup right here is perhaps maybe just a bit outdated. Obviously DJ LeMahieu is on the injured list. And Oswaldo Cabrera has really been stepping into that role. And by the way, you know, I think when most people, you know, originally, because the Yankees had made a trade the day before opening day, they traded for John Birdie from the Miami Marlins. They gave up, it was a three-team trade. They gave up one of their prospects. They gave up catcher Ben Rortvedt to Tampa, and the prospect ended up going to Miami, whatever. It was a three-team trade with Miami, the Rays, and the Yankees, which netted them John Birdie. And I think most Yankee fans were just like, all right, let's go. John Birdie is going to start at third base while LeMahieu is on the injured list. But then all of a sudden you see Oswaldo Cabrera just comes out of nowhere and starts ripping the ever-loving piss out of the baseball. He just does. Like, it was unbelievable how much his approach had changed. And not only just like doing it with the bat, but doing it in a lot of clutch situations, late in games, late game homers, playing good defense, all of that stuff. Oswaldo Cabrera has been filling out that spot really, really nicely. And I will say this, because one of the things you said before, Nestor Cortes didn't have a great outing. In his defense, right, Nestor Cortes had a very bad first inning, right? Like, that's the thing, is like when it comes to a lot of these starts, like you kind of have to dig deep a little bit. Nestor Cortes had a bad first inning, bad first batter of the second inning, right? He gave up that homer to Jake Myers in the first game, but was pretty much lights out the entire game after that. I was actually fairly impressed. I mean, Marcus Stroman put up a fairly good start. Carlos Rodon got himself into a bunch of trouble in game two, but was able to work out of it pretty much every time. So I was actually pretty pleased with the pitching performances. And one of the things that I really want to highlight as well, and there's actually two things I want to highlight. First of all, Aaron Judge has had a terrible season to start, right? Aaron Judge really has not gotten going yet. I don't think anybody's really worried about whether or not he's going to get going, but this is what the Yankees did to the Astros, and Aaron Judge was not on his game at all, right? Aaron Judge had, you know, or was suffering, going through an injury through spring training, missed a bunch of time in spring training. It might take him a couple more weeks to get him back up to speed. But the other thing I want to point out too is that the Yankee bullpen had 15 and a third innings of work and didn't give up a single run. Like, it is against a very good Houston Astros lineup. I'm just, listen, I as a Yankee fan, Alfred, I'm just, like, I'm over the moon. Like, this was, like, best case scenario for me from with the Yankees sweeping the Astros. It was just, like, how do you view, like, obviously it's very, very early, right? But do you view the Yankees, because we didn't have you on the show when we were doing previews. Does this series against the Astros differ your opinion of the Yankees or the Astros for that matter from what you had preseason, right? Like, does this change your mind on either one of those teams?
While I'm shocked that the Yankees swept the Astros, my opinion doesn't change because it's too early to tell. Small sample size. There's still 158 games remaining for each team. I've seen it all through social media all over the weekend. Fans jumping up and down, ready to throw a World Series victory parade because they 4-0'd the Astros. I mean, it's a little premature. It's a long season. We all know that crunch time in baseball is the dog days of summer, which we are nowhere near yet. So, my opinion doesn't change either on either way. Now, if this was a conversation we'd be having in August, early September, late July, I might have I might be sitting here with a different thing to say.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. So where did you, I don't know, where did you have the Yankees preseason?
I think that preseason, I said they were going to get a wild card spot. I think they were going to come in second in the AL East behind Baltimore.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think that was primarily the universal opinion, right? And Baltimore looks good so far too. Granted, they were playing the Angels in Baltimore, so there. I think there might be a little bit of a difference in competition there. But truth be told, that's going to be a crazy division. I think that's going to be a real thing. Quick update here on scores, by the way. Like I said, this is I think part of the really exciting part about where these regular season shows are going to go. Because now we actually have games to talk about. Obviously, Atlanta took a 9-0 win over the White Sox earlier today.
Thank God that game didn't go the full nine innings either.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it did. I think they did finish.
No, they called it after eight due to rain.
Did they call it after eight?
They called it after eight.
Wow. Okay. So they did call it after eight then. They did. You're absolutely right. Yeah. 9-0 Braves beat the White Sox in Chicago. The Colorado Rockies took a 5-0 loss to the Cubs in Chicago as well, which that was crazy, by the way. Both Chicago teams are playing at home. On a Monday?
Yeah. one got called to rain and the other one went a full nine innings. Can you believe that?
It really
is. In the same city, a few miles down the road.
In the same city. It's unbelievable. Could you imagine, because again, you and I are both from New York, right? Could you imagine what the traffic would be like in New York if the Mets and the Yankees were at home at the same time? It would just be... It would be unbearable. Like, good luck getting in or out of Long Island. Like, it wouldn't happen.
Nope.
It just would not happen. The Pittsburgh Pirates, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, right? But the Pittsburgh Pirates took an 8-4 win against the Nationals in Washington. They're 5-0 to start. The Pirates are off to a pretty good start here, and they're getting it from a lot of places. They are really hitting the baseball well.
Let's not forget, they had a hot start last season and everybody said that they were going to be in the playoffs, and they faltered out toward the middle to the end of the season.
Look, Pittsburgh is one of these teams where, like, I think that most people are kind of projecting them to be last place in their division, right? Because you just look at this roster and it's just not refined. right? The rotation, I think, through the dog days of summer, you know, like this rotation is going to get beat up in certain parts of the year. They just will, right? But this lineup's interesting, man. They have a lot of good young talent. O'Neill Cruz is the obvious name. Cabrian Hayes has turned into one of the better young third basemen in the National League. I know they're really excited about Henry Davis behind the plate. You know, they've got some real nice players. And Mitch Keller atop that rotation, I mean, that guy has the makings of being a potential ace in the National League as well. So the Pirates could be a very exciting team going forward. So interesting stuff there. Those are your score updates from earlier today. The Royals and the Baltimore Orioles are tied at 3, heading into the bottom of the 7th. The Angels and the Marlins. The Marlins right now have a 4-3 lead over the Angels in the top of the 6th. Reds and Phillies tied at 2, heading into the bottom of the 6th. Rangers have a 6-0 lead over Tampa, heading into the bottom of the 6th as well. A lot of these games kind of venturing into the middle of the game here. Texas is a very interesting team. They're getting a lot of production out of Wyatt Langford, their rookie. And obviously, I think, you know, as we get further into the season, you're going to see that production from Evan Carter as well. And then obviously right now, bottom of the 5th, it is still scoreless in Queens with the Tigers and the Mets. So let's transition to the Mets, Alfred, because this is your team. This is your club, right? They had a tough go this weekend, right? They got swept by the Brewers at Citi Field. And this is a Brewers team that, after trading Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff isn't pitching this year, right? Like, this was a team that I think most people, they don't have Devin Williams for the first 3 or 4 months of the year. Like, this is a team that I think most people were projecting to kind of take a big step back. Now, I think probably the same thing could be said about the Mets from where they started last season, right? Because I think most people, you know, had the impression of the Mets last year, at the beginning of last year, that the Mets were a potential playoff team. I don't know that anybody really thought that going into this year. This was a team that obviously their message, even coming in from their owner, was saying, we're setting up for 2025, right? Like, that's really the target year. But right off the bat, because I want to, this is your team, right? What were your impressions? And we'll get into Rhys Hoskins in a minute, but what were your impressions from the Mets' first series of the season? And again, the expectations might be low, but what are your impressions?
Well, before I answer that question, I already have the Mets losing 90 games this season. So front office did nothing in the offseason. You go out and you get Joey Wendell and G-Man Choi and, you know, scraps, bench scraps from other teams. You get JD Martinez at the last minute possible, so he didn't even have a proper spring training or a camp.
Yeah.
You know, it's just frustrating. You know, we have the richest owner in all of baseball, and the GM he hires decides to be a cheap bastard, and for lack of a better term. No, the guy Steve Cohen in the span of 1 year, goes from, I'm willing to spend money to win and do whatever it takes, I'm going to bring a World Series to Queens, to going, oh, it was a, yeah, to going, oh, I made a bunch of bad investments, so let's start this thing over. And now I'm going to be hesitant to spend all this money that I have, yeah, because we didn't win last year. So to me, it's a disservice to the fan base, because in my opinion, you're supposed to field the best team possible. But no, this is a sign of things to come this weekend. You look at these games, the team have played with no heart, uncompetitive. The offense is flat. They lost opening day. They only had one hit the whole game, which was a Starling Marte home run. I'm glad to see Starling Marte remembers how to hit home runs.
Starling Marte, by the way, just a quick update on this game, and this kind of tacks onto your point as well. The Mets only have 2 hits so far in this game. Starling Marte has one of them.
Exactly. So I'm glad Starling Marte has remembered how to hit, but it's frustrating. And then the one game they were actually competitive in Saturday, they still lost.
Yeah.
Tylor Megill, he overworked himself in the game yesterday. He lands on the IL with a shoulder strain today. Yep. So the last thing, we already have Kodai Senga out to begin the season. The last thing we need is another rotation arm gone.
Yeah, this rotation is not one that can afford injuries as you're looking at it right here, right? Kodai Senga already on the injured list. David Peterson as well on the injured list. Now you're seeing Tyler McGill heading on to the injured list. I mean, obviously you're going to see some new names in that rotation, but listen, it was a rough start for Luis Severino. Obviously we saw that in game two of that series, but hey, listen, it hasn't been all bad yet for the Mets though. I will say this, Sean Manaea is carrying a no hitter into the sixth inning. Seven strikeouts, no hits for Sean Manaea for the Mets against the Detroit Tigers so far today. Obviously, do I have any wood around here that I can knock on?
90 games, Mike. Don't be surprised when it happens. 90
games. Well,
we're not winning 90 games. We're going to lose 90 games.
Well, hey, listen, I don't know that I disagree. I mean, this is where Pecota had them ranked to start the season. This is what the win totals were. They have them projected at 83-79. And I think Dalton and I both said this when we were going over the East divisions last week. I think both of us kind of said that was a little generous. And the thing that we were really surprised about, and I kind of want to get your thoughts on this too. Like I said, I don't want to spend too much time on it because we don't expect much from them this year. But I thought we were both under the impression that they were giving both the Mets and the Marlins too many wins and not enough wins to the Washington Nationals. I mean, 58-104 for the Washington Nationals is, like, in my opinion, it's disrespectfully low. That is a crazy low win total. I think they're young and they don't have a lot of experienced major league players, but I think they're better than a 58 win team. No,
I think 58 is accurate for them. They're like the one AAA team that gets to play Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that might be a little bit low. Okay, so let's move on to this. So Yoshinobu Yamamoto gave up, had a way more encouraging start in his last outing than he did in his first in South Korea. Pitching against the Cardinals in this game, five innings, two hits. He gave up no earned runs, five strikeouts through those five innings. This was a much better start compared to what he did in South Korea, where his start only lasted one inning. He had given up, four earned runs in his start in South Korea against San Diego. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that they're expecting from him. I think the question really I want to ask is, like, there were a lot of questions going into what his career was going to look like from the beginning, right? And especially after what his first start looked like, it had looked like for a second that Yamamoto was going to come here, the stuff wasn't going to translate, right? Because his fastball was, I mean, he doesn't throw 100. He throws like 95, 96, right? Which, again, it's velocity, but it's, if you don't have that late life, 95, 96 is very, very hittable in the major leagues, right? Yamamoto's fastball was pretty flat. He wasn't hitting the strike zone as he's accustomed to doing. So a lot of people were saying, you know, a lot of these Japanese pitchers, traditionally what they do when they come over to the United States is that they come here and they throw their breaking balls, right? Because their fastball just doesn't, it's a different ball. It's a whole different game for Japanese pitchers when they come here, because the stuff just it just doesn't play the same as in the MPB. So like that's what a lot of people were saying after his first start. Now, and again, the Cardinals, I don't know, are as good of a team as San Diego is, but that's still a lineup that I think has a lot of guys that can really hit. Arenado, Goldschmidt, Nolan Gorman, you know, whoever
else. Jordan Walker.
Right, Jordan Walker as well, one of the up-and-coming players. But Yamamoto pitched much, much better. So are you kind of – what are you leaning on, right? Because I think you're kind of getting the tale of both stories here. He was paid $325 million for a reason, right? What is your opinion here on Yamamoto? Has your opinion changed? What are you feeling right now? after two pretty much polar opposite starts to start his major league career?
Well, you got to remember, Mike, a lot of these Japanese guys who play professionally in the MPB, there's a lot of differences between MPB and MLB. Number one being the fields. The mound distance in the MPB is closer to home plate than it is in Major League Baseball. You also got to remember those MPB stadiums are smaller stadiums. They're all indoor stadiums. So, you know, Yamamoto has an adjustment period. And I said the same thing when the Mets signed Kodai Senga last season. He may need a season to adjust. With that being said, everybody was ready to write this guy off after his first start. He couldn't make it out the first inning. His ERA was a 45.
Yeah.
He comes back and he's sharp in his second start. I don't know whether it's a case of the Padres are better than the Cardinals, but you also got to remember that first game was still, while those two teams were playing a regular season game in Korea, everybody else was still in spring training. Technically, it should have been a spring training game.
Yeah, right.
But also one thing, whether it's the London series or these games in these Asian countries, but a lot of the times when two teams in the MLB go and they play at a neutral site, it's offense galore. So people tend to forget that. There was a game in London a couple of years ago between the Yankees and the Red Sox. Each team had about 22 runs apiece or more. So people got to forget that games like that, yes, they count in the regular season, but those are more like exhibitions. Just like we don't judge anybody off of spring training, I think it's too early to judge Yamamoto. I still think he's going to have a successful rookie season, and barring that he doesn't get hurt, he may not win the Rookie of the Year, but he'll be in the mix for Rookie of the Year contention, I believe.
Yeah, well, I think right now for the National League, he's the clear favorite. I mean, and both me and Dalton felt that way a couple of weeks ago when we made those predictions. And you're right about those neutral site games being primarily offensive showcases because, I mean, listen, we can talk about all we want about how Yamamoto had a tough start in Seoul, but you got to keep in mind, too, like Joe Musgrove is an established top of the rotation arm in Major League Baseball, right? And he has been for a few years now. Like Joe Musgrove has really turned into a really nice Major League pitcher. 2 2/3, 5 earned runs, 7 hits against the Dodgers in South Korea. So it wasn't like that game ended up being 15-11 final. So there was something to be said about offensive output in South Korea. So yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think he's going to be fine. And I think most people that are saying, I'm a little worried, I don't know that there's really any warrant for that. Just simply because, like, look, I think generally speaking, and maybe sometimes not, but I think in this case, probably, major league people know more than we do.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Like, guys that work, it wasn't like the Dodgers were the only team dumb enough to give him over $300 million. No. Most major league teams, and good ones, well-run major league teams that are in contention pretty consistently, right? The Dodgers, the Yankees, the Mets, the Phillies, St. Louis, like really good, well-run organizations were all willing to pay very serious money to Yoshinobu Yamamoto, which is why he got the biggest contract ever given to a pitcher in Major League history without throwing one single Major League pitch. So there is something to be said about that. Now, again, if we walk into, and Dalton said this a couple weeks ago, if we walk into August and his ERA is like a 6, then I think we're allowed to say, yeah, like he's 22 starts deep and he's got a 5 or a 6 ERA. I think people are then going to say, oh, that contract could age really, really poorly. Right. But we're not there yet. He's 2 starts deep. He had a bad start in South Korea, but then he dominated in his second start. So listen, and I think you and I would both be lying, right? You said that earlier that the Mets hadn't done a single thing in the offseason, right? And I think part of that is because they were Yamamoto or bust. Listen, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. I don't want to speak for you, but I wanted Yamamoto more than anything in the world. As a Yankee fan, I was refreshing Twitter. It was so unhealthy. I was refreshing Twitter over and over and over again just to be like, just to catch that update within the first 20 seconds of it coming out. I was ready for Yamamoto to be a Yankee. I'm assuming you were the same way with the Mets because this, I mean, the things you heard about this guy were just unreal.
Actually, I wasn't with all. No, because look how many great big name free agents were out there this summer. We didn't need a Yamamoto as far as pitching wise. Blake Snell was available. Jordan Montgomery was available. And then again, all the other bats. Like I said, we got Martinez, but, you know, Bellinger was around. So Jorge Soler, who the Mets should have made an offer to, was around. Now he's going to be hitting bombs in McCovey Cove.
Yeah, it's a shame that Jorge Soler signed in San Francisco. Dalton was saying this the other day. But Jorge Soler, I think, is really suppressing his bat in Oracle Park, don't you think? I mean, that is not a good hitter's ballpark. It just is not. Those gaps are deep.
they rob home runs and make them triples.
Oh, my gosh. Like, you wouldn't believe. It's amazing how Barry Bonds hit so many home runs over there. Imagine how many he would have hit if he was playing at Yankee Stadium. The guy would have had 1,000. Right. Like, it's just unbelievable.
The gas is a wonderful thing.
That's right. okay. So I want to backtrack a little bit because we kind of skipped over this and I didn't mean to. We kind of went through to Yamamoto's first start without talking about Rhys Hoskins. So on opening day, the bench is cleared. Right. And this was a big story throughout baseball because it's something that we always talk about every single season. There's what is perceived to be a dirty slide, right? Where either somebody gets hurt or somebody doesn't get hurt, but they're at the risk of suffering a serious injury, right? So Rhys Hoskins, ground ball, what was it? A ground ball to short, ground ball to third, right, Alfred? And it was, and Jeff McNeil, who's playing second base, is covering second base. Rhys Hoskins slides late into second base and kind of takes out his legs, right? I wouldn't say take out his legs, but he slid. I don't think he got cleated, but he definitely ran into one of his legs. It was a late slide, and McNeil was obviously visibly upset. Both the benches cleared. It was a pretty ugly situation. And now, you know, for the remaining whatever it was, 2 days that the Brewers were in Queens, Rhys Hoskins was showered with boos like you wouldn't believe. You know, you would have thought that Jason Bay had walked into the arena, into the stadium. But what's your take, Alfred? Dirty slide. Do you think McNeil was kind of being a little soft? Like, what do you think?
Well, the slide was late. Usually, as somebody who's played baseball a good part of their lives,
right?
You don't slide that late. If you know, like, I understand split decisions, but, you know, if you're going to slide, you start your slide midway. Between, well, maybe about a little bit more, maybe about 60% of the way between first and second. That slide was extremely late. That wasn't a baseball play. And I think Mets fans and the organization itself still have PTSD from the Chase Utley incident where Ruben Tejada got his shin broken. Yep. So, I mean, hey, I don't know if our manager told Johan to throw at Hoskins, but I didn't blame him. I wasn't mad.
Yeah, I mean, Johan Ramirez is, I mean, and he showed it in his next outing. I mean, he's kind of not very good, right? Like, that's, I feel like that's somebody that if you're going to throw, if you're going to sacrifice a bullpen arm for to throw at somebody, Johan Ramirez would probably be one of the guys that's safe to do so. Yep. It's not like Edwin Diaz is throwing at him where you need him to win games.
Right.
No disrespect to Johan Ramirez. Well, I guess I can't just say that. That was pretty disrespectful to Johan Ramirez. Hopefully he doesn't know where I live. Anyway, so here's the thing. I understand why people are saying that that's a dirty play, and maybe it is, right? Because you're 100% right. The slide was late. It was very late.
Blatantly late.
It was definitely late, without a doubt. That's inarguable. It was definitely late. However, he wasn't cleated, and it didn't look like the impact created by the slide was that hard, right? It didn't look like, to me, from my view, that Rhys Hoskins slide into Jeff McNeil, that would not have caused Jeff McNeil to tear his ACL and lose the entire season. I didn't view it that way. Now, I understand, like I said, why people are upset. I understand why Jeff McNeil was upset. I also think that it didn't require Jeff McNeil getting that mad. I also think that Jeff McNeil was, for the lack of a better term, kind of being a bitch. Like, I just think it was a little bit overplayed. I don't think he needed to start screaming at the guy. Like I said, Rhys Hoskins could very easily have made a dirty play, but McNeil didn't end up getting hurt from it, right? McNeil, I don't know, was in any real danger of getting hurt from it. Like, that was, in my view, and you can argue with me if you disagree. That, in my view, is that if a base runner wanted to disrupt a double play, that is how you would do it, right? You want to impede the throw without really trying to cause injury. I don't think Rhys Hoskins was trying to hurt Jeff McNeil. I don't think that was the intention. I think he was trying to break up a double play. That's my thing. I think Jeff McNeil took it to an extent that I didn't think it needed to go. And then once the situation got escalated, then I think both parties were really kind of feeding into the whole thing, right? Rhys Hoskins with the crying baby, the whole bit. And they were obviously talking smack about each other post-game and whatever. But that's what I think. I think Jeff McNeil, for the lack of a better term, overreacted.
I'm going to have to disagree with you, Mike, because, yeah, you said he didn't get cleated and he didn't get injured, but he could have.
Yeah, sure.
If Hoskins slides a bit later, or if he makes contact, or McNeil doesn't dance out of the way, who knows what could have happened. Sometimes you don't intend to do things, and things still happen.
Yeah, so, but I would argue that saying that is almost like saying, well, if – and I'm the only reason I'm using this example is because it's the first players that come to my head, right? If Luis Severino had thrown at Jackson Churio's head on accident, right? Luis Severino's command is not the best in the world, right? Luis Severino throws a 92 mile an hour slider, right? If he loses control of a slider and it ends up going behind Jackson Churio's head, right? Well, Jackson Churio could slam the bat, charge the mound, and be like, well, what the hell did you do that for? But because technically he could have gotten hurt by that, right? I just think that the reason to get that upset being that, like, it could have been a dangerous play. I just don't know that that's reason enough to cause such an uproar. I mean, like, I think that's where you're losing me here.
I mean, like I said, freak accidents have happened on baseball fields before. So
sure.
Because as somebody who played, I would be mad if somebody slid into me at the last possible second just for the sake of breaking up a double play. Mind you, they're already up when this happened. So
yeah.
You know, I don't blame Jeff, but that's just from my where I sit.
Well, like I said, I don't know that I blame Jeff McNeil for being upset. I don't think I think I blame Jeff McNeil for being that upset. Right? Like I don't know that was necessary. Do you think that the actual reaction of what happened, right? The benches clearing, all of the talk, all of the like all of that, right? Like the Johan Ramirez throwing at Rhys Hoskins, whatever. Like, do you think all that was necessary for this? Like, because I understand that that's kind of how baseball works, right? Like, it kind of reminds me of, like, you remember last year when Ian Happ, right? It was a Cubs Cardinals game, and Ian Happ took a swing. And whether it was on purpose or it wasn't on purpose, hit Wilson Contreras, who was the catcher, in the back of the head, and he started bleeding, right? They needed to take him out of the game. His head was literally, he got hit in the head with the bat, right? So I don't know that Ian Happ did that on purpose, but It happened. Miles,
yeah, but a backswing, you can't control that. Just sliding into somebody intentionally and hitting a guy by accident on the end of his swing is two totally different things.
Well, hey, I don't know that I disagree with you, but that's kind of not my – that's not really where I'm going. Where I'm going is, like, the backswing, whether it was on purpose or not, it happened, right? Wilson Contreras got taken out of the game. It was kind of actually a fairly brutal scene because you kind of saw the blood gushing out of his head. It was actually pretty gross. But, like, the next at-bat for me and Hap, Miles Michaelis throws a 94-mile-an-hour fastball at his hip and hits him, right? No emotion from either side. Miles Michaelis didn't, like, point and start talking. Like, there was no showing up. Ian Happ just calmly walked down to first base. Like, there was just a general understanding of players that that's kind of how baseball works, right? Something like that happens in a game. The other team physically, like, shows that you acknowledge it. I understand that that's part of the game. Right now, eventually they threw Miles Michaelis out, and I thought that that was kind of ridiculous. But, like, I understand that that's a part of the game. But this kind of just piggybacks off of my question to you before. Like, do you think that all of that extracurricular stuff was necessary in all this? Because I'm not sure that I do.
I guess you make a point. I mean, different teams handle things differently. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen. I mean, look, I think, like I said, I think it may have escalated into a place where it didn't need to go. But look, like I said, we also don't know what Rhys Hoskins or anybody said to Jeff McNeil after. Like, if Rhys Hoskins said something about Jeff McNeil's mother or something like that, then that totally changes the entire situation. So I don't know. So that's kind of where I'm at. Let's give you a score update here. We're about, whatever we are, 42 minutes into the show. We'll give you a bit more of a score update. Royals and Orioles still tied at 3 in the bottom of the 8th. Right now, it looks like the Orioles threatening first and second with one out. 4-4 tie with the Angels and the Marlins heading into the bottom of the 7th. The Reds and the Phillies right now are in the bottom of the 7th, tied at 2-2. Rangers and Rays going into the 8th. 6-3 right now looks to be the score there with the Rangers on top of Tampa Bay. It's at Tropicana Field in St. Pete. Detroit and the Mets, top of the 7th, and we are still scoreless. Alfred Parser Jr. I mean, this is
it's two winless, terrible teams. Somebody's got to get their first win.
Yeah, well, Spencer Torkelson looks like he just hit a 106-mile-an-hour ground ball to left field, but I'm not sure that registered as a hit. I'm not sure really where it is. It says the only hit right now for the Tigers is Andy Ibañez. So it's a shame right now. Sean Manaea looks like he lost his no-hitter, 6 innings. Hey, but listen, that's a great start, Alfred. Sean Manaea, and it's a shame he's not going to walk out of that game with a win. 6 innings, 1 hit, no earned runs. He had 8 Ks in the game for Sean Manaea against the Detroit Tigers. What do you make of that?
We're playing the Tigers, and it's Sean Manaea we're talking about. I'm not impressed. Like I said, 90 losses. I don't – until they show me otherwise, I'm not optimistic.
He's not optimistic. You heard it here first. So that game is still nothing. The Astros have jumped out to a 4-0 lead in Houston against the Toronto Blue Jays. With two outs here in the top of the 3rd, it looks like it's been a rough start so far for the Blue Jays. Bowden Francis, 4 earned runs on 5 hits in 2 innings for the Blue Jays starter. Astros right now riding Ronald Blanco right now, 2 2/3, no hits, no earned runs, 3 Ks so far for Ronald Blanco for the Houston Astros. Kyle Tucker went deep. Yiner Diaz went deep. Jeremy Pena went deep so far in that game. So they've got 3 home runs right now in the first 3 innings. Those Houston, actually, it's the first 2 innings. It's top of the 3rd. They're heading into the bottom of the 3rd now. But man, oh man, are they rebounding so far.
I mean, I told you, there's nothing to worry about.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing that I'm concerned about with the Astros, right? their back of the bullpen, the back end of the bullpen is fantastic, right? And it got even better when they signed Josh Hader, right? When they signed Josh Hader, now they're stacking up with Hader, Ryan Pressly, Brian Abreu. That's a really great back end of the bullpen. It's getting to the back of the bullpen that where you really lose it. I mean, I think the Astros had one of the worst, and this is dating back to last year, one of the worst bullpens outside of their back end, like outside of their eighth and ninth inning, they had one of the worst bullpens in baseball. Like they're hovering at like a 6.5 ERA, like really, really tough stuff for the Astros. That's the thing that concerns me about them now. Cause that's the thing is, and it honestly, it's a tough problem to fix because where you invest with money and trades and everything like that, like that's a lot of starting pitching back into the bullpen. Like you just need, I mean, you know this, Alfred, right? Like you just need innings eaters. You need guys in the middle of your bullpen that are just not going to blow it for you. And I'm not sure the Astros have that. I think that's a real problem, especially when they're playing in a division where like the Texas Rangers and the Seattle Mariners look like they are ready to pounce on that division. Like, does that worry you at all for them?
Not at all. And it's actually healthy to see the AL West competitive. I have some slight concerns about the Seattle Mariners, actually, after seeing them. Boston shouldn't have took as many games as they did from them. Yeah. Luis Castillo, I wouldn't have expected to get beat up in his first start of the season. But, I've got some slight concerns. The offense seemed a little flat. Especially that top of the order with J.P. Crawford and Julio Rodriguez over the weekend. So I've got slight concerns about Seattle. But well, then again, Seattle, the last two seasons have been a team that's always been a second-half team. So we'll see.
Luis Castillo did have a bit of a rough start. 5 innings, 4 earned runs, 6 hits in that game. Only 5 strikeouts against the Boston Red Sox, who – and a lot of people are not – are Their expectations for the Boston Red Sox are pretty low. They ended up splitting that 4-game set. And here's the thing, like here's really the interesting part about this is that like the only real good start that they got, well, they actually, I shouldn't say that. They got 2 really good starts, right? Logan Gilbert had a fantastic start, 7 innings. He had a great start. George Kirby, same deal. George Kirby had another great start. That's somebody that Dalton is super, super high on, is George Kirby. But Bryce Miller did struggle. Luis Castillo did struggle. And if you really look at it, Alfred, I mean, this is a team that at the moment, I mean, they really struggled putting the bat on the baseball against Red Sox pitching, which I think you and I could both agree. The Red Sox pitching staff is just not top tier. It just isn't. So, you know, right now, like, and again, like I said, it's super, super early, only through the first 4 games, but just listen to these stats right here. 30th in runs per game, 29th in hits per game, 29th in batting average, 30th in on-base percentage, 29th in slugging, 29th in OPS. They are in the bottom 2 in the league so far offensively through the first series of the season. I mean, regardless of whether or not you're high on the Mariners or not, like that's got to be some cause for concern, right? Like I said, there's 158 games left to go, but that's not the kind of start you want, Alfred, right? I mean, that's bad.
You know, but then again, like I said, there's 158 games left. So yep. Long season. Yeah. Anybody who has struggled this early, it's a bit of a overreact to panic on any team.
Yeah.
Unless you're an Oakland A's fan.
Well, yeah. I think if you're an Oakland A's fan, you have other problems to worry about, right?
The only fan base dumb enough to pay for parking to go pay for a game ticket to not go into the stadium and just have fun in the parking lot.
Did they really do that?
Yeah.
That's right. They boycotted, right?
They boycotted by buying a ticket to the game and paying for parking. and just staying in the parking lot and chanting sell the team.
Well, hey, the A's will take their money wherever they can get it, right?
and then they did all that just for Shane Bieber to look like the second reincarnation of Cy Young.
That's unbelievable. Oh man. All right. So let's discuss this before we get out of here. We're already running at about 50 minutes. So the Cubs beat the Rockies today 5-0. But one of the interesting things about this game is that it was Shota Imanaga's first major league start, right? Like we already had talked about what Yamamoto has looked like. This was Shota Imanaga's first major league start. He carried a no-hitter through into the sixth inning. Six innings, two hits, no earned runs. He struck out 9 in his first start. Now, I understand that this is a game that's at Wrigley Field. It's in Chicago. It's against the Colorado Rockies, who could very easily be one of the worst, if not the worst, team in all of baseball this year. But I still am incredibly impressed by this. Because, look, at the moment, this is a Cubs team that is very, very realistically in the running for the NL Central. And once you're – I mean, Alfred, you and I both know this, especially given the past couple of years. Once you get into the playoffs, like, you're – all you need to do is get hot for a couple of weeks, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like, we saw it with the Phillies. We saw it with the Diamondbacks. We saw it with the Rangers. Like – these were not top flight teams entering into the postseason, but because they were in the playoffs, I mean, they were taking out the Braves. They were taking out the Dodgers, right? The Rangers had taken out the Astros, like taking out the super juggernauts at the top of the league. That's what these guys were doing. If they can get great starts, especially with Justin Steele going down, if they can get Shota Imanaga back to a point where he can give them quality start after quality start after quality start. I mean, that's a real, real plus for the Chicago Cubs. What do you make of them so far this season?
Oh, I hate to repeat answers, but too early to tell.
Yeah.
But Imanaga, he made me a believer today. I mean, he made me more of a believer than Yamamoto did. So, but like I said, too early to tell. I mean, it was a rainy game on the fourth game of the year in April. But hopefully all us Imanaga believers aren't made to be April fools, you know.
Yeah, well, certainly that's certainly true about that. I mean, I remember, you know, when he was a free agent, right? And there were a lot of teams that willingly passed on Shota Imanaga because he projected as a fly ball pitcher, right? Like he was a fly ball pitcher in the NPB. They said, listen, the hitters here are better. Those balls that are fly balls in Japan are going to go out of stadiums here. So there were just teams that said, like teams that were playing 81 games in hitter friendly ballparks were already out on Shota Imanaga because they were just like, listen, he's not going to translate. He doesn't profile well in our ballpark, period. I mean, if you get a first start that looks like this, I mean, it's like, I agree with you. It's very, very early. And that's really the benefit of baseball right now as it stands in the early going. But I mean, if a first start like that makes everybody look like an idiot.
Yep.
Right. It certainly does. It makes everybody look dumb for not saying, because here's the thing, like Yamamoto was obviously the big name this offseason as far as Japanese imports, but Yamamoto was a 3-time NPB Cy Young Award winner, right? He was, or whatever the equivalent to the Cy Young Award is over there, but 3 straight years Yamamoto won that award, and he's 25 years old, right? You're signing up for a long-term guy. Shota Imanaga is 30 years old.
Yep.
Right? Like Shota Imanaga is at this very moment in his prime and could from this point on debilitate. But again, these guys that are brought in from Japan are not pun intended, right? They're built different, right? They don't age the same way as American-born players do. Shota Imanaga has good stuff, and it looks like, as of right now, it's translating.
Yep, I agree with you. He looked really, really good today, I must say.
He certainly did. Okay, so that'll do it for us. Alfred, do you have any closing thoughts right now before we head on out of here?
One thing we didn't cover that I would just like to say is you wrote Shane Bieber off. I understand that he did it against Oakland. I get that. Oakland is a double-A team playing Major League Baseball. But for a guy who has struggled with injuries, and the people say, oh, he's washed up, he's over the hill now, to go six innings, strike out 11, that's almost two strikeouts per inning.
Yep.
And only one walk, no earned runs. He's made everybody who wrote that man off look like a fool. I'm not saying he's 2018 or 19 Shane Bieber or even Cy Young Shane Bieber, but I think the Biebs is back.
Well, hey, listen, people kind of forget. Shane Bieber is 28 years old.
He's not old. Nope.
Like I think people are kind of under the impression that Shane Bieber is this like old timer kind of pitcher. Now, do I think he is what he was a few years ago? No, probably not. But I don't find this. I don't buy into the fact of him like rapidly aging and rapidly debilitating before our very eyes. Right. Like you said, six innings, four hits, no earned runs, 11 strikeouts against Oakland on opening day. It was on the road. It was at the Coliseum. And he looked, he looked like his younger self. So I agree with you. And by the way, if Cleveland wants to have any chance at that division, and this kind of goes without saying, right, they need Shane Bieber to be an ace. Like, they need Shane Bieber to be really good. I mean, if you look at that rotation outside of Shane Bieber, there's nothing really there, right? Tristan McKenzie is a nice little younger arm. Tanner Bibee, Logan Allen, I think they like a little bit. Carrasco is – now, listen, Carlos Carrasco's best years were in Cleveland, so maybe he finds something again there. But this is a team that is relying on a lot of young pitching to take them places where they want to go. Bieber really is the guy that they need him to be the staple that he's been in years past if they want him to have any chance at the postseason this coming year, especially in a division that where I think like
it's
most
people,
that well is it even because like I know a lot of people think that Minnesota is like the very clear top dog in that division. Do you feel differently about that?
No, it's not the White Sox. It's not the Royals. Who else is in contention for that between Cleveland and Minnesota?
You might be right about that. Okay. So that does it for us. I want to thank Alfred Parser Jr. for stepping in for Dalton Brown today. It was a real pleasure, my friend. I enjoy talking baseball with you. We don't do it enough. We need to do it more, especially off the air. We need to do it more. And we will definitely have Dalton and I will definitely have you on going forward as a guest on this show throughout the season. So it was a pleasure having you today, bud.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
All right. So that is Alfred Parser Jr. Ignore the Dalton Brown on the bottom, filling in for Dalton Brown today, doing a terrific job. So thank you to Alfred. I'm Mike Guido. This is the Bi-Coastal Baseball Podcast on the Grid Network, the only exclusive baseball podcast on the Grid Network currently every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern on Twitter, on YouTube. You can catch us on the Grid Network and on the Bi-Coastal Baseball Twitter page on my Twitter page. It streams there too. Make sure you tune in. All right. Enjoy the baseball this coming week. We'll see you.
All right.